Alright, fucking God help us on this one. Love you so much!
Welcome to the unofficial King Gizzard podcast, the show about the best band in the world, question mark. I'm Captain Shipwreck.
And I'm Professor John P. Weatherclock. You can call me Professor. We are going to be discussing the first three rave shows of the European tour. The European tour has started. We have listened, we have watched, we have analyzed. Just so you know, there was also an orchestra show. We don't want to give up, say too much about our operational security, but we've been monitoring the situation on the ground in London. The band did not stream that show. They streamed the first three rave shows that we have watched. We can talk a little bit about the orchestra show, but we're mostly going to talk about the rave shows.
Great. Let's see. So lyric of the episode, is that where we start?
Let's.
Dancing is good for you.
Damn it. That was mine.
Really, was it?
It really was. I have a backup. The breeze on my flesh, it feels so fucking good. Look at me now, Helen. I don't know. Yeah, dancing is good for you. Yes, yes. We'll get to that. Night three, the third show, night two of London.
We'll return to Helen as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad. So the tour began in Manchester on Halloween. My headline for this show, and so begins the most experimental tour in King Gizzard's history.
Cool. Yeah, may well be. My headline was, why is Giz way better than last week?
They are. Why does that keep happening?
They can't keep getting away with this. I thought they were really good last week, but this was really, really good. A lot gooder. I'm not sure what happened. Doesn't make sense.
The Melbourne show was great, and it's true.
Yeah.
They have gotten better over the week. Maybe the push-ups? Something about the soil over there brings out the unts.
I think that's right. I assume so. Maybe that was sort of a practice show. They were getting the yayas out or something, but they're out now. And I'm down for it, as the kids say.
I think that was the goal of the Melbourne show, for sure. Why it was free, perhaps. We had some good pre-roll in the stream leading up to this first night.
Yeah, that was our first peek at the electric skin flute. What a space. The space was massive, which was partly why I found it surprising. I'm sure you were going to mention it anyway, but that there was no camera person on stage, because there was room on this stage, in my opinion, for a group of camera people and maybe some couches and snacks. But there wasn't.
It looked like a large, like a hangar, which I guess is a nightclub. Huge open space. I don't know why the videographer was not on stage. Maybe they hadn't showed up yet. Maybe they were ill. They showed up the second show, the first night of London.
Very much so.
And you're right. So in the pre-roll, we got our first look at a new instrument. The I saw someone on the Reddit setlist thread call it the Steely Dan, which the origin for that name, the Steely Dan, is the book Naked Lunch by William S. Burroughs. The Steely Dan is a steam-powered dildo.
And this one does not appear to be steam-powered, but it doesn't...
Kinda sounds like it is.
Plug in? Does it plug in?
It does. It has, right? A cable hanging from it.
Oh.
I think once we get into the show, we can talk more about this new instrument.
Okay.
The pre-roll also included Lucas not being into the tone that Stu was playing on the new flute, and Cookie touching all the instruments like a kid in a toy store, kind of just like going through and just like tapping everything.
Some Magenta Mountain, Stu practicing Magenta Mountain a little bit in the pre-roll.
Trip of the day.
Yes. Yeah. I'm curious. It was dark.
It was very dark.
Hard to say.
My drip of the day. So this is who wore the best clothes. This was Stu for me. So Stu was wearing a jacket almost the entire show, and then he eventually put the hood up. The other band members were wearing short sleeves. So my theory here is that Stu was ill, and maybe three quarters of the way through the show, he took off his jacket and hood. He was soaked in sweat. I think his fever broke during the show.
That's wonderful. I'm so happy for him. I broke the law, I think. We don't have one, which makes them easy to break. I couldn't really see their outfits, but we had this moment with a dude in the crowd who was wearing the official Silver Cord / Rimlicker Farms black suspenders and pink glasses. And for a second, my son, the little captain, and I were confused as to how Joey had suddenly appeared in the crowd. So I have to give that man his due. Nice outfit.
Did he have a mustache?
Yes, he had a thin porn stash, right? Is, I believe, the proper nomenclature.
Or that we decided Halloween. No, of course. This was a Halloween show.
Right. And most people wear mustaches on Halloween.
As is the tradition over there. Again, they call it over there, bubble and squeak.
Bubble stashing. Yeah.
Let's get to the set list.
Please.
Thea opened.
Yes, very much so. Epic opening sounds like a... It sounded big. It's such a... I don't know if it's the space, but it just sounded big, like a pipe organ in like a massive church space. And then sort of dialed back again, more back to like a slower build, hint of things to come maybe with the big noise.
As usual, we're going through the set list on KGLW.net, by the way.
Yes.
Thea led into Hot Water, which had Joey on guitar. And actually, this was the first time we saw Stu play the electric flute, the Steely Dan, if you will.
Yeah.
So this is an electric flute. We think you blow into it, not over it.
Right.
Seems like you can choose any tone in the world, and yet... And yet, Stu decided that he wanted this to sound like an overdriven, distorted bassoon, and that it would never be in tune.
Almost never. There were moments where it accidentally seemed to be in the key of a song or two, but generally that didn't appear to be the organizing principle.
No. Well, even a broken clock is right twice a day, which is the case with this flute, I suppose.
A broken flute is right twice a show.
Yeah, hey, that's about what happened, actually. Those are the numbers. Fascinating instrument. Curious to see its evolution.
We got a lot of multiple people on multiple instruments, including Nathan, and it started here, and I like that, right? We had Joey on guitar here for times while Stu was on the eclectic Zorba flute, Lukey on bass, then Ambi and just Ambi and Cookie on Nathan for a little while. Then Ambi goes back to the congas, lots of congas, which raises a question. How many drummers are there in King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard?
Yes, there are at least two.
I'm going to say two. Yeah.
There have always been two.
It seems that whether we knew it or not, there were always two. Were there ever three?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and review the footage, but I don't think Ambrose even had the tiny cymbal when Eric was still in the band.
Right.
Speaking of which, there was a time when during Hot Water when they had one drummer. No, they had no drummers. In fact, Cavs actually left his drum kit to go talk to Ambrose and hug him.
I would too.
Yeah. This led into Flamethrower outro, which was fierce as hell. Both Joey and Stu on guitar. And Cavs using all the toms that he had, maybe more of them. I kind of feel like in my, when I see him play the toms like this, I wonder if he's playing some sort of whack-a-mole game.
If so, he's winning. The transition between the two, I thought, was particularly buttery, as they also don't say that. But I think that's a people, the English people eat a lot of butter. And so that would explain the smooth transitions between Hot Water and Flame Flutter.
I don't even know what the English word for butter is. This was followed by Magenta Mountain. So the band went, within four songs, went way over an hour in just four songs, which is makes these rave shows really hard to talk about because each song is 10% the song you're used to and 90% something totally wild. And so in the show notes are links to the videos. Hopefully you can watch them. But like they do during rock shows, there's more of the songs you're familiar with. Like it's 50-50 or it's even more. But these things are just out there.
Yeah. Joey had an important comment, I thought, at the end of Flamethrower Outro, which was excellent, that it was, and I quote, fucking unz.
Fucking unz.
Which I assume is a reference to the German word.
The pretzel company.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Magenta Mountain started with Stu on like a clean guitar sound, almost acoustic-y. Maybe some like nearly like pre-float along teases, but maybe not exactly the melody, but more like the vibe. We got a really good look at Jason Galea's new amazing background visuals over the course of this show. And boy, it's cool. There was literally a magenta colored mountainscape on the back screen for this particular song. We also got a long, an extended Joey's butt cam for some reason. And it got closer, it got pulled out, it got closer again. And he's obviously been doing his squats and we're all very happy for his health.
Squats and slut drops, I assume.
I assume.
This led to Slow Jam, which was the first time Slow Jam was played on Nathan. Mm-hmm. Slow Jam 1.
Right. On sax.
Now, was he fully standing up? Was he fully upright playing sax?
No, of course not. I accept your theory. We discussed offline, I apologize, but it might be very heavy. It might be a lead saxophone.
Lead saxophone. Yeah.
Lead saxophone.
What other excuse is there? The man cannot stand up and play saxophone at the same time. It could be, you know what? Didn't think about this. He's tall. Could be an altitude thing.
That makes a lot of sense to me. He is legendarily tall for a shrimp. And everyone knows that saxophones just sonically don't work over a certain atmospheric incline.
Now, this transitioned into the debut of Hell's Itch. And while this transition, Joey was playing the Flying V. This is a super long intro for Hell's Itch. I mean, the song itself is wild and long, but I don't think we knew where this was going. Actually, I think we did because I had the set list ahead of time.
What? Impossible. It's a song about, you know what a hell's itch is?
I don't know.
It's a bad, bad sunburn. It's about bad, bad sunburn. There's a sunburn that you can get that's so bad, and it's called Hell's Itch. It is associated with suicidal ideation. Because it's so bad and insatiable, creating a desperate need for some temporary, unsatisfying relief by scratching that drives people crazy, which explains the repeated references to Helen, apparently. I don't know. Genius.com has lyrics that are annotated, and you can go and find this song listed. You can click at various highlighted places on this website and find information about Helen, which is, of course, a reference to Helen of Troy, according to some random person on the internet that seems to think that they're somehow connected.
Now two people.
I'm not sure which of us that is.
They skip Stu's verse, which is the first verse, I believe. And then I saw Stu gave Joey the lyric sheet, and then Joey started singing. I don't know what happened there.
Unclear.
But this also included, so they decided we're going to skip Stu's verse, but we're going to also add some lyrics from the song Pure Shores by All Saints.
Yeah, wild. Wild.
Don't know. For I what? Don't actually know who that is, but I did look it up and it is not my thing.
Okay. Swan Song?
Swan Song. Death Comes.
As you said, these are hard to describe, but I thought mesmerizing. That's one of the great poor descriptive words there are out there. But I was lost in the trance. I just thought it was beautiful.
I was really lost in the next song, which is L-U-S-E-Q, Lusek. Again, wouldn't have known had I not had the set list ahead of time. What is this? No lyrics that I could discern. Is this similar to Joe Jam, which happened in Melbourne? In all caps, there was a theory someone was proposing on Reddit where Joe Jam, Lusek, maybe other songs coming are somehow related to the band members' names. Joey, Joe Jam, Lukey Sequencer, perhaps, Lusek.
I felt this sounded similar in some ways to the sort of major scale, coherent melody hints that we heard in Joe Jam. So I wonder if there's a vibe that we're going to hear there when this gets released as some sort of something, if it does. Stewie very much threatened to say Gilgamesh at one point, but made it only as far as Gil.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know what these are. And if it's part of an album, I wonder, you know, we had a Joe, we had a Lucas, perhaps. Are we going to get a scoot, a stew flute, a scoot? Mm-hmm. Are we going to get a
shrimp tap?
There it is. And this led to the final song of the night, which was a crazy call.
Yeah.
To close the show with Murder of the Universe without having done any of the other Murder of the Universe songs here. So this included Jason Galea running the screen.
Yes, which was amazing. It was even more badass-er than normal. Instead of just the digital display, it seemed that he had added sorts of cool little frilly artifacts that made it look more techno-ravified or something.
Yep, I think you're right. And this was the first time Murder of the Universe was played on Nathan, a fully electronic. Fascinating call. I don't, you know what? The art of set list design is something I don't understand, and I don't understand it even more now.
I think it seems important to Stu. It's part of his job security. If we can predict what song will come next, it's as if he feels he's not needed.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if we could predict it, what good would he be in that band?
He would just write. It would just be a man waving electronic instruments near monitors to create feedback.
Talking about them polar bears, Cookie?
Oh, yeah.
That sound means it's time for Cookie Watch. Cookie Watch is, of course, a registered trademark of Kraft Nabisco, a wholly owned subsidiary of Mondelez Industries. A bit of a Cookie Watch from the third show. This is hard hitting news. I don't know if you recognize this. Next to Cookie on the Nathan table was a cup from McDonald's with a lid and straw. Now, what was in that cup?
I can only assume McDonald's brand beverage. There was some pre-roll footage of a burger that seemed initially to be McDonald's, but I believe they describe as a junior Whopper. So there are connoisseurs of terrible American foods in London.
If I had to guess, I'd say it was a Fanta with vodka.
I think that's right. They call it the Phantom Vodka.
Phantom
Vodka. And I just, you know, it takes a very keen eye, and I don't always have it to present a proper cookie watch. But I just really wonder when we're going to hear cookie. Why do we never get to hear a cookie guitar solo? Surely it's possible one of these days. I know it's going to happen, and we're all going to lose our minds. And I just, I'm ready. I'm waiting for it to happen.
He's capable. I believe in him.
Yeah, of course he is. Yeah, I want to see that day.
Yeah, cooked Craig.
Are we at the next show? Can we talk about? We were sort of talking about pre-roll because there's this burger here. I want to tell you that Ladbrokes was founded in 1886 by Mr. Shinwind and Pennington after the town of Ladbroke in England. It's a betting parlor.
What's happening
of some
right now?
Kind that shows in the pre-roll where people are tragically betting their lives. One man is tragically betting his life away on what seems like a slot machine, but with no frills or engagement. He's probably betting, but it looks like he's reading a set list. And I just think Ladbrokes is an incredible name for a betting parlor in England, of all places.
That's a little too, it's too on the nose.
A little bit, but that apparently is not why it's named that way. But businesses are so old in London, especially, that I think sometimes they predate the current parlance that makes them so funny.
So the second night was moving from Manchester to Brixton, London? Brixton,
yes,
on London?
Not just right. And there's a wonderful, I just can't recommend highly enough watching Amby in the pre-roll reading the names of all the places, including Brixton, that the trains will go to as quickly as he can. Very impressive.
Blackpool North, Blackrod, Bolton, Bramhall, Bredbury, Bridgend, Brinnington, Bristol Parkway, Bristol, TM, Broad Green, Brewbottom, Buckshaw Parkway, Burnish, Birdsycombe, Buxton, Bacada, Carlisle, Chapel, Inverong, Cheadle Home, Cheddleham Spa, Chester, Chesterfield, Chilling, Chirley, Church Street, and Cholwell Bay, Congleton, Craven Arms, Crew, Cumbrad, Devonport, Deansgate, Degenway, Dewsbury, Dinton, Disley, Dore, and Totley, Dogholes, Elston, East Dinsbury, Eastbury, Eccles, Eddale, Edgehill, Flint, Knapphills, Bursham, Cernathan, Vale, Plateau, Glasgow North, Blossoms. That's only G.
Jesus.
My headline for this show is, what in the actual fuck is this band? Which is something I say to anyone around me at some point during every good show.
I don't think I can add to that. I don't have a separate headline. I'm sorry for this show. It really felt very much like a continuation of the last show. There are probably people who didn't sleep between shows. There's some travel involved, of course. I'm sure it felt very different for them, but I guess my headline is you had to be there and you probably weren't because it was such a small venue.
Mm-hmm. About 1,700 people, which looked about less than half the size of the previous night. I mean, we've seen them. You've seen them with what, 12? We've seen them with 10,000 people, 1,200, 10,000. 1,700 looked small. It looked like a great old venue.
Yeah, seemed amazing. I'm super jealous for everyone who got to be there.
The show opened with Gilgamesh, which, I mean, during the first song, the crowd was jumping up and down. I feel like they were so hyped and jumping in unison that I felt the vibrations all the way where I am, which I'm not going to tell you where I am.
Yeah, I Gilgamesh, a.k.a. Frankenstein, as apparently it was called on the set list for no clear reason. I changed my mind since our discussion of Field Division about Giz not doing traditional beat drops. Now they do. And Does anyone in the world other than Michael Caviar do acoustic beat drops like this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. There's a band that I've been seeing for 30 years now called the Disco Biscuits. Well, they just got rid of their drummer, I think. But yeah, they do kind of EDM, but with traditional guitar and rock instrumentation, and they do beat drops. But I'm not sure I agree that the traditional beat drops, because what I found is that Cavs is doing, like, he's hitting on the next note that you think they would drop on.
Yeah,
there's a slight difference in what they're doing and the buildup. So he's playing the snare. It's a long, long buildup, and I think they really enjoy that. And I watched several times. As Cavs is looking at Lucas, who's playing Nathan, Lucas turns around and goes, now. And then they, boom, they hit it with the bass and the drums.
Yeah, there's no mistaking this for 4-4 on the floor, as they say.
That led to, so Gilgamesh led to Superposition, which had Lucas on the bass, and then they bailed, kind of. There was no singing on this. I'm not sure what happened here. Superposition, we saw them play at Field of Vision. It has words. And it kind of, I don't know if it fell apart or someone said, let's ripcord this. But maybe it's a good thing they did, because they still went over time with this show.
Yeah, great bass line. I mean, I just really enjoyed Lucas on the bass. In fact, I thought it was awesome. But yeah, they didn't hang out long.
Because they went quickly into Blue Morpho, which got very fast and hard.
And fun, these quick cuts that the streaming crew is doing, or maybe it's happening from the booth, but it's really exciting. Continued creativity in how the stream is presented to us and using the rhythm to start creating these like quick cut moments between camera angles. I just loved.
Yeah, they seem to have cameras mounted, like kind of pointing up at Stu and up at Joey. It seems up, right? Yeah. And they're just cutting back and forth with rhythm sometimes. It's pretty fun.
I thought down. I don't know. I thought I could see the camera for a moment. Now I'm not sure. Maybe you're right. But the camera angles, and these were available on the fixed cameras that we even had the previous night when there was no one on stage, although we did have someone on stage this time. Jackson Devereaux, I guess, of Heaps Keen Films, was on stage streaming for us, but the still cams look to me like filming someone inside a space capsule on a mission. Like it's super like grainy, awkward camera, but I love it. It does look like a Voyager on a mission for somewhere afar.
I think they're endoscopy cameras, because I think that's the goal. That's right. They're just going to get them closer every show until they are down the boys' throats.
I think that's what happened with the colonoscopy cam that we earlier discussed on
Joey. Oh, Joey's, yes.
Mm-hmm. There's only so many ways to enter a human body with a camera.
That sounds like a challenge.
Mm.
Yeah. Blue Morpho had Cavs on his drum, Nathan. He's got a little modular synth next to his kit. He was playing that and he was dancing while sitting on the stool. That was adorable. And that led into Butterfly 3000.
Yeah, cool.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was awesome.
This got up to 156 beats per minute, unlike the 188 from the Melbourne rave show. I was counting.
Okay, right. Well, that makes sense. It was intense and inspired Mr. Devereaux of Heaps Keen Films to get out into the pit with the camera, which I think was a fun experiment that he didn't think went well, according to his comments, at least in the YouTube chat. He did, and he did get help later. We can talk about that, but no telling what he was filming. He couldn't see what he was filming, but it was a cool vantage point to be all up in everyone's face while people were dancing their brains out.
People were going nuts. And by the way, dude, this show started at midnight. Started at midnight.
What is the matter with everybody?
And was followed by a bull ant set from Joey.
It started late for me, and I live many, many time zones safely afar, but I also thought it was late.
It was dark, yeah. So that's how I know it was late. And this led to a song that people have been asking for forever to return. Cy Boogie.
I don't know if anyone else had the set. Someone else must have had the set list, but I was watching in the YouTube chat as people asked for Cy Boogie between every song. There are people who ask for Cy Boogie before every song starts. And I could smell the tears through the chat. People were so excited. It's been a 240 show gap.
That's right. Stu played the electric flute. At this point is where I said, what the fuck even is this band? I noticed Ambrose during Cy Boogie was playing a keyboard at his Nathan station, and they took us to Funky Town.
They did.
This reminded me of Funky Town by the Funky Town band.
It was amazing. I thought it was delightful. The crowd there also went crazy. Just a really good time.
And I also noticed that during Cy Boogie, Cavs left, and I don't know where he went and why he went there.
I didn't think he went far. It seems to me that he just checks on Ambi every now and then. Ambi's moved way back with him for these shows. He's no longer at the front of the stage. He's hanging back. Usually only Cavs and Lucas are on higher platforms. And so they've got a whole new social vibe going towards the back of the stage now.
Yeah, they're just,
or at least they did for a few shows.
Drinking buddies.
Yeah.
Cy Boogie was followed by The Garden Goblin, which was the most normal song of this tour so far.
Yeah, just Garden Goblin. No meaningful improving that I saw. Just to, you know, wham, bam, Garden Goblin, you ma'am.
Which led into another fan favorite, Smoke and Mirrors. Awesome.
Wow, that was weird and amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of, this is my highlight for the night.
Mm-hmm.
Was Smoke and Mirrors all, how long was it? We spent a long time there.
It was, and it starts with percussion, before which Ambrose said, you all want a drum solo? It's not really his
offer. And I do. Yeah. Well, they were back there consulting, you know, they're drinking buddies, so he can make promises. Just like Joey can make promises about things Ambrose is going to say at various times, as he does.
Yo, Ambi, what are you gonna fucking say, motherfucker?
Not much.
Not much.
Yo, Ambi, what are you gonna fucking say, motherfucker? Not much. Smoke and mirrors. Smoke and mirrors. Smoke and mirrors. Steer a clear ear. Watch your terror interior. Inferior actions. Mysterious convoluted satisfaction. The suffering of others, like you're above us, you're not among us. It's not a concern to see me squirm like a worm in the beak of an eagle.
You think he only knows the words to Grim Reaper?
I kind of do, because he did rap Grim Reaper like almost the entire thing in Smoke and Mirrors.
He probably had Smoke and Mirrors lines written down that he could read from, but who wants to read rap when you can fast a rap?
I will have to look at the time for Smoke and Mirrors. I don't know how long it was. They did stop it, and then they started again with Magma, which was the first modular synth Nathan Magma.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we actually, you and I watched this show together, and I think you said at the time they could have kept going. Magma was right there in the end of Smoke and Mirrors.
It really was. Some members were trying to transition and someone else was like, no, let's just start fresh.
Yeah, it could have. It was hard to tell one from the other. They smoothly flowed into one another. The sax was awesome. Ambi was awesome on Magma. I want to see what happens if we ever get official bootleg releases of this, if we get stems from this. Joey played guitar on Magma, and I just mostly could never hear it. And
no.
I don't know if he was trying to do like some ambient something or if people there could hear it differently. That's been my experience, is that what you hear in person live doesn't always match with what you get through the stream. And I wonder if people could hear Joey's guitar cranked up loud, but I want to hear that version. I wonder if he was soloing a bunch.
For a bunch of it, he was just completely inaudible. And then I think he hit a pedal, and then we could kind of hear him playing the Magma theme. But yeah, that was a little frustrating. I wonder what happened.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I really want it.
Magma led into the final song of the night, Extinction, mm-hmm. which had a really cool creeping start, and Joey on guitar.
Plenty of like loud, vibrant guitar forward Joey that I thought was awesome and crunchy.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that Gilgamesh was labeled as Frankenstein as the first song of the show. We don't know what happened there. As far as we know, there's no King Gizzard song called Frankenstein. There is a cover that they could do, but that doesn't seem like them, called Frankenstein.
It really doesn't. And since you alluded to the fact that we had some early access to the set list, I looked it up on Google. This indicates nothing, but I seem to get some sort of a hit from KGLW.net about the fact that they had never played this song that is a cover, which I don't understand.
I think it's a weird internet indexing thing. Oh my gosh, we skipped the drip of the day.
I moved it to the bottom. I knew that we had to talk about it.
Because I need to know, you need to tell us more about this. So I think both of our drip of the day was Stu, who was wearing his blue overalls. Although Cavs was wearing his Cookie Dog 69 shirt, but Stu was wearing blue overalls and then his hat. Tell us about the hat.
Well, I don't know a lot, but I did watch a saga unfold on Reddit wherein someone had given Ambi, someone was saying they saw Ambi in person in London and gave him this wonderful hat that said Crispy Shrimp. And they were shy. They saw Ambi and then they were shy to approach, but then remembered, I bought a hat, which I was planning to give Ambi at the show, that says Crispy Shrimp. So it's okay. I'll use that to approach. And Ambi was very happy about it. Then later in the day, there was a new post with someone who had run into Stewie on the street, who was now wearing the hat. The first person piped up and said, that's the hat that I gave Ambi earlier. And then we all awaited further developments in the saga, which culminated in Stewie wearing the hat for the show.
Amazing. This is a orange trucker style hat with embroidered the words Crispy Shrimp. And of course, he didn't keep it on the whole show. How could he? He never has. He wouldn't. How dare he? But it was great to see. He came out with it. What an interesting story. Who knows what's next for Crispy Shrimp hat?
I don't know. I would love for it to show up here. I don't wear a lot of crispy hats or shrimp hats, but if I had that combination of the two, I think I would wear it.
London Night 2 did not start at midnight. It started at, 8:15 that time?
Yeah, thank God for them. I hope they slept. I don't know what to hope. I would have been tired. Joey must have been up very late blanting the previous night. But yeah, same venue, this tiny little awesome venue, Electric Brixton. And
we know they were up late. We know they were up late because we received photos of of a friend of ours meeting Cookie, Joey, and Lucas. And it was 4:54 a.m. outside of Electric Brixton. They were all still at the show. They were drinking beer outside. At least Lucas and our friend was.
Good man. Lucky ducky. Mostly. Although I would have been so tired.
Well, they're on, you know, boomerang.
A beer. It's all fine. Apparently you can do it if you have a beer. it's amazing what you're suddenly capable of.
Any headline for London Night 2?
Yeah. London Night 2, no. I don't have separate headlines. It again felt like an extension. Help me. What do you think?
My headline was Dreams.
Great.
Dream had a debut and the show was dreamier. It was far more ambient than the other two shows. Maybe because they were all up until 6 a.m. I don't know. Mm. I liked it. But Dreams is my headline.
That's wonderful. Pre-roll. Speaking of ancient names for places, the famous Cock is a friendly venue offering delicious food, great drinks, and amazing music only a short walk from Arsenal FC home to an excellent pre- and post-match, home to an excellent pre- and post-match Arsenal crowd. So the pre-roll lingered for quite a bit on this fine establishment, which, as London is wont to do, has funny names that, you know, refer to things that now mean other things. It gets a 4.2 rating after 1,868 reviews, so it's probably cool. More importantly, we found other new instruments on the pre-roll, which could be candidates for new untuned instruments to come, including calves on a tone adjustable synth drum pad that you can change the tone on by moving your drumstick along the face of the pad, and stew on the keytar. So that could be coming. We did see a clip of that on Instagram as well, but on the pre-roll, you get a little more time with him and playing with some tones on the keytar.
I did miss the pre-roll for this, but I did catch Ambrose posting on Instagram of Stu playing the keytar quite rhythmically as a percussion instrument while straddling a oil-filled space heater.
yeah, literally straddling. It sounds like hyperbole, but doesn't happen to be. Dream's soundcheck was also on the pre-roll. So for all of those who get utterly worked up about whether or not you're allowed to talk about a pre-check or a soundcheck, it was in the pre-roll. We all did know about it, but it's fine. If you don't want to know, just close your awareness eyes and you don't have to know what's coming.
Just close that third eye. The show opened with Set, which was the first time for a set opener. A set opener.
Set's never opened a set before. It was so good. How does Cavs maintain these droning rave beats? Like it seems like it could get monotonous, but I imagine he's like all hypnotized or something. He spends so much time in a little zone. Sometimes he changes things up, but sometimes he just seems like he's a fucking drum machine.
I hope he enjoys it. He certainly seems to, and we do.
I think so.
The set went very hard. It was during the set that I noticed for the first time that there is a rollable cooler under Nathan.
Yeah. I didn't notice till the end of the show when Grace came and cleared it out of there, put various drinks into it, and then pulled it away somewhere.
Removed 5 cartons of Marlboro 100s.
Yeah, I need a rollable cooler under my desk. Think my wife will notice?
You got to get married first.
Ah, damn it.
Set led into what we thought was going to be Dreams, but was ended up being 2.02 Killer Year, which was the second time they've played this ever. And with a super out-of-tune flute, electric skin flute.
Oh, no.
Ah.
Yeah, second time they've ever played it, the first time being just like a sec ago or whatever. Yeah, you know, I'm not, it's fine. It's a cool song. I don't like the Beach Boys. Did I mention that?
Yeah, we talked my theory about only non-Americans like the Beach Boys.
Also hit way harder than in Melbourne. I mean, this was a good way to compare now that they're playing songs. I thought even just back in Manchesterstonshire. This is way gnarlier and intense. But now that they're replaying songs that we heard in Melbourne, Florida, Shire, way harder.
Yeah.
This was obviously stepped up a notch and comparable to itself as better.
It was shocking, especially since this is this is a chill song. It's coming a beat. It's a chill song. But boy, this was not chill. This led to the debut of Dreams, which is another song that people have been crying for a long time, and it got dark and dirty.
Thanks for turning up, we love you so much. All right, Mickey.
Ambrose on the sax. I watched the Joey cam. Well, actually, it was a cam behind him, but he was making this face like he might need to clean up a bit.
I thought the sax and the orble flute, flobo, sounded cool together. It was nearly in the key of this song, I thought. And those two instruments, I think the electro flute sounds very clarinet-y, and a clarinet and a saxophone are not so different.
No.
Are we, after all? And I thought they sounded really fucking cool together.
They do have a similar reedy, the electric flute has a similar reedy tone.
The electric flute does have a reedy tone for no clear reason.
Stu likes it. He really could make it sound like, I mean, if you listen to the show, you will hear a flute sound, and that is not the flute. That's a keyboard. And if you hear a overdriven oboeinette, that's the flute. Mm-hmm. And if you hear a lead saxophone, that's the lead saxophone. This got very spacey. Dreams got very spacey.
Yeah.
A lot of the show was like ambient. And this led to Into Shanghai, which had, you know, you can say it has the Grow Wings and Fly quotes in it, but it's how they have played Shanghai for years. When I first saw them, they did a whole Grow Wings and Fly thing as part of Shanghai.
But it didn't have all of the lyrics fleshed out as much. And so there were more of the lyrics to Grow Wings and Fly. And also Joey was just very Grow Wingsy, I thought. He had his guitar out and I thought his tone was close. His approach was closer to the, you know, canonical Grow Wings sound that we know from Phantom Island and from the orchestra shows.
Was followed by Flamethrower, which is a Flamethrower outro, which they had played on Friday. Yeah, this was a Sunday night. They played it two nights ago, which was kind of surprising to go back to that.
Yeah, in fact, If memory serves, I would have looked this up if I didn't think about it till this moment, but wasn't it skipped in Melbourne?
It was on the set list to be last.
I think it was on the set list and not played in Melbourne. So it's possible that this falls within our like OCD theory of stew that because it wasn't played in Melbourne, it had to be played in Manchester and it was gonna need to be played at Brixton. And so that's why they had to happen so near each other.
You'd think, well, I think he, if that were the case, he they would have played, they would have opened with it in Manchester,
Yeah, you're right. That's correct.
which
That's
is what
certainly
they
what
did in
happened.
Europe, right? They had the fourth color on a set list, they
Exactly.
cut it off, and they opened with it the next night, which I believe was the first time they ever opened with the fourth color, which is
That's true.
a weird song to open with since it's like a transition thing. They also played Magenta Mountain right after this
They
Flamethrower, which they also played in Manchester.
did. That's true. Stu on guitar, Lucas on bass, and I know you were waiting till Magenta Mountain for the drip of the day. I don't know exactly how to describe this, which is unfortunate because we have some inside information. So since I was treated as the insider, as a Reddit spectator, even though I had no inside information, I'm going to treat you as the insider because you got contact from this friend of ours regarding
Right.
I don't know what to call this
So I would
particular
have,
type of headwear.
I think Stu would have won the drip of the day again because he was wearing his dance shirt,
Yeah,
which was a
right.
shirt he wore at night one of Field of Vision, a t-shirt with the sleeves ripped off, but a purple hood attached, and the word dance in like a monospace lowercase font. But during Magenta Mountain, Stu, when he went back to the table, was given one of these, there's like a furry headband that has air pumps that hang around your nipples, and you can pump air into them. You've seen these, and they flap the ears. This one, you have not seen these.
I did not understand that. No,
Oh
I
yes.
had no. I'm getting new information as you speak. I just saw the thing, but I didn't get the mechanics.
So, as the father of children, I've seen these before. I know, realize you're a father, but not of
That's
children.
what we call you, Professor
Father of
John P.
children.
Weathercock, father of children.
Yeah, so it's a headband that's furry, and then it has these long, almost like ears that hang down to your nipples, and you can pump these little things that hang down, and they flap the
With
ears.
your nipples?
If you can, I mean, if you've stretched. This one also had the one Stu was wearing also had a unicorn horn in the middle, and I saw
Okay.
him put this on during the stream and got a text from my friend who was there in the photo pit that said, "That thing Stu is wearing, I gave it to him." And Stu was gracious enough to give it back to our friend
Really?
Yeah, he gave it. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, he gave it back to our buddy, and he's keeping it.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder if I'll get a chance to touch it someday with my nip. I'm out.
There are parts of Magenta Mountain that felt very rock. There was a four on the floor situation happening with Magenta Mountain, which was really interesting considering this was a rave set.
Yeah.
Magenta Mountain led into Sense, which is such a good Nathan song.
It really is.
Yeah, and I
Yeah.
wonder if they'll ever play it the old way again. I saw them play Sense in my first show. Very like rock instrumentation, very chill, but boy, do I like Sense on the Nathan.
I bet they'll play it acoustic again someday. Ambi stayed on sax for Sense. That was awesome.
Yeah, as he should.
I
There
agree.
was a wonderful transition from Sense into the last song of the night, Kepler 22b.
Dancing is good for you.
Anton is good for ya. That was so great.
Jackson, I guess, goes back into the pit with the camera. Seemed to have more control this time. Holy shit, was this fast! fast at the end. This is my highlight of the night. This was incredible. They just finished with the raging hellfire of a final set. The crowd was going crazy. I was going crazy, knocking over furniture in my home. Was so fucking fast at the end.
Very
what
fast.
The hell, dude?
Very wild.
How many gigawatts per hour per second?
I didn't count this one, but it was rattling all my telescopes.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy.
And that was the first three rave sets of the tour. A day off, and then they did an orchestra show at
Royal Albert Hall.
Yes. You in the cheap seats clap, the rest of you just rattle your jewelry.
You know how many holes it takes to fill that place?
Now I know how many holes.
Now you know. Who's, Chad Kelly conducting at Royal Albert Hall. That's a treat. He's also the one who did the orchestration for Phantom Island. And he himself is the conductor live at Royal Albert Hall.
I was told by someone at the show that this had a lot of energy, more than any orchestra show in the U.S., although they didn't attend every orchestra show. They did all the Phantom Island songs with the orchestra. Their kind of break song, their set break song, was Gaia, which had Cavs do a drum solo, and during which I saw video of Stu sitting on the ground taking his shoes and socks off.
Oh, damn it. I didn't get to see this yet. This happened like an hour or two ago. So I hope that I can see at least the footage of Stu taking off his foot attire. But especially I want to hear a recording of that Gaia.
The man, he can't stand things on his feet and he can't live without things on his head. They did, Gaia was kind of the intermission song, and then the orchestra came back and they did what they did in the U.S. The River, Crumbling Castle with the outro, This Thing, March for the Rich, Dragon, and Iron Lung. And tomorrow, they're going to do a very similar show in Paris.
Yeah, I wonder if, I assume Chad Kelly's staying with them. I don't know. Is he going to tour around Europe with them the way Sarah Hicks did? I don't know. He's British, isn't he? I think, I don't know.
I don't know. That's interesting. I guess I assumed he was Australian.
He's not. I think that he lives in Australia, and he and Stu met through Stu's wife is friends with his wife, and he moved to Australia and did all of the orchestration. He's sort of the what's his name, the fifth Beatle, the Sir George Applebaum,
or Billy Preston,
no, damn you,
Sir Yoko Ono,
Sir George Martin of Phantom Island.
It's true. Yeah. The next rave show is on the 6th, Thursday the 6th.
Which we're allowed to watch.
Which we will be allowed to watch. How I miss them. I feel like I haven't seen this in so long.
Yeah, I'm just crazy enough to be looking forward to it. Omnium Gatherum?
Yeah, so random stuff. This is Giz related. I in the winter months, especially when it's like too nasty to go outside for a walk or whatever, I do a dancercise. I'll put on a concert and I will dance very hard for like 30 minutes. And this tour is a gift to my mental and physical health. Like I put on London night one yesterday. My calves are sore.
That's awesome. I love that for you. I'm not doing that. But
man,
good.
I'm telling you, dancing it's good for you, and it doesn't feel like exercise. It feels like cheating.
Exercising is good for you.
No, don't say that. Don't call it exercise.
All right. I don't have Giz-related Omnium Gatherum, but a music-related thing, I just watched the movie Sinners, and I just think for music lovers, it's just a neat movie about music across the ages. I loved it. I have a sweet spot for Michael B. Jordan because I watched a lot of Friday Night Lights with Professor Weatherclock back in the day. Hmm. Jack O'Connell plays the scary bad guy, and he's this amazing, probably Irish actor from, I saw him in Rogue Heroes, which is an incredible story about the SAS, the special forces, British special forces in Africa. And he's incredible. And he's so good in this. And if you love music and you either love or are not put off by vampire movies, somehow this combines the two beautifully.
I love that for you because I like the movie. I love the concept of what the role music plays in it. I really like that a lot. So we're going to be covering the next few rave shows when they happen. Are we going to be covering, are we splitting this up into two podcasts, the entire tour? Or are we going to do three? What are we doing?
I don't know the answer to that. I think we can officially announce now. Let me check if this is, it says here that we don't know.
Thank you, producers. And thank you to all who sent in the letters about my audio. We're working on it.
I want you to know we do read all of your emails, and I apologize to those who we don't get a chance to respond to quickly, but we do respond to every email eventually. It just takes us a little bit of time to get back to you. But we are caught up. Is that true?
Absolutely.
I think as of today, we're caught up to every email
we've received so far. And I've read every word that has come in.
Yeah. So hang in there.
All right. We'll see you soon.
Bye, friends.
Thank you very much for your cooperation.
That was fucking sick.